Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Scrum Down, where it goes down, prepare to bow down to the best in town. It's the Scrum Down, where it goes down, prepare to bow down to the best in town. We don't just walk the walk, we talk the talk. It's real talk from London to New York. My life forked, had to say goodbye to playing. I was declining, no point in staying. My body was old, my hair was graying. Best in the world, what point I was claiming. But after injuries, that form wasn't sustaining. One after another, man, it was draining. I was sick and tired of explaining. So I left and rested my breath and came back a person with way more depth. Now I'm finally coping, honest and open. That is the motto of the show, at least I'm hoping. So thanks for the listen and hearing my rendition. A Scrum Down tradition, let's launch this mission. You know. Welcome to the Scrum Down, where it goes down, prepare to bow down to the best in town. It's the Scrum Down, where it goes down, prepare to bow down to the best in town. Boom. Another one. Peace.
Welcome to episode 47 of the Scrum Down, NBC Sports Rugby Podcast. I am your host with the most, Alex Corbisero. It is great to be back, guys. Coming in hot after round two of the NatWest Six Nations on NBC Sports Gold. Because of the Winter Olympics, it is again on NBC Sports Gold for round three. So if you do not have that package, please do subscribe. It is worth its weight in gold. No pun intended, or was there? But anyway, back to this week to break down all the Six Nations action of round two and preview upcoming round three. Rob Hoadley is back on the pod. He's making himself a regular on this pod. Do not miss it. So we're joined with Hoads again, mate. Great to have you back on. How's it going?
Good, mate. Great weekend of rugby again. So excited to get stuck into it. And you were at the England-Wales game, right? How was the atmosphere there?
Mate, it was incredible. It was such a good test match. So much unbelievably quality detail, especially from England at times. I was just in awe watching the game. The fact that Wales were still in it after parts of the game and how well England had played. And then just how competitive. I just loved the whole game, mate. Like and the atmosphere is special in England-Wales. And it just seemed to be a high-stake game that it could have been 6-3. I was still on the edge of my seat for it, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting when you see the score. There wasn't necessarily, a lot of tries or what people consider maybe open flowing rugby. But I thought it was an unbelievable battle. Obviously, the obvious starting point is the physical intensity that both teams brought. But also, I thought there were some tactical battles out there that we can dive into that were just really entertaining.
100%, mate. I think I was a little bit, not frustrated, but I came away, I did an article for RFU, basically, I watched it live, no commentary, I gave my thoughts. I thought it was an epic game. I thought Wales played very well. I thought England were exceptional at times, like actually really exceptional, and some of the best they've looked in a long time. And I sort of then watched it back on TV, and a lot of the media was, you know, the main story was the TMO decision, which I get was a big moment in the match, but there was so much else to talk about. And then it was that. And then it was, you know, at the end, the sum up was England need to be much better if they want to carry on in this tournament. And I was going, man, I don't think anyone beats them at Twickenham when they play like that. I just don't think so. Like, I just thought it was too many of the little battles they were winning. I thought their tactics were spot on. Ford and Farrell were masterful. The back three were good. And the front five were fantastic.
Yeah, you haven't really missed anyone out there. So
no, the back row were good. Sam Simmons came off at half time. But my God, did Sam Underhill come on and save England at times. Mate, I just thought it was a very good test match. And I thought it was a very mature experience performance. And it's a type of performance you sometimes expect from the All Blacks. When you know they can carve up and play amazing rugby, but they come to a condition, it's a tough game. And that variation and the way they control the type of game that is played that day was phenomenal.
Well, yeah, I think there's two elements to that in that England, I agree, were unbelievable in their tactics and the clinical nature of their play early on. And second part of that is I was really impressed that Wales even stayed in the fight and had a chance at the end. Because actually, I thought they got really outthought by the England management team. So if we just dive into that a little bit, we talked last week about how both teams were going to approach this. And we talked about how England would have to deal with the blitz defence that Wales have, you know, been so successful against Scotland with. And we talked about the possibility of stretching the field, obviously laterally with how they set with their width, but also some linear opportunities with some attacking kicks. And if you look at the first 15 minutes of that game, England put six attacking kicks in from within the Wales half to regather. And if they didn't regather the ball, they created a ruck towards the sideline in Wales's half from which it was slow ball and England could line up their own line speed. And I thought they were fantastic in generating field position and taking Wales out of their rhythm.
Mate, completely agree. I thought as well, Wales' saving grace was their discipline was world class. To be under that amount of pressure, that amount of in your own half, trapped in there at times, England were rolling, and to only give away, was it something like two penalties the whole game or something, or give away no kickable points? That's kind of unheard of. Most teams, in my mind, England come in there, they scored their two tries early, and based on the way they played, they probably kick another 10, 15 points. That game's out of reach. The team chases a bit, and they probably score another two tries off forced errors from their opponents. And Wales' ability to stay in that match made it amazing. But England were masterful. The balance of the kicking game of Ford and Farrell and the way those guys can just find ways to kick the space over the defence, pin players back. Also, they kicked very well from nine contestable. And their first try was complete reward of a great contestable kick. And then Owen seeing space and Johnny May's brilliance. But there was just little things. The front five were good. They were efficient. I loved England's intensity at the attacking breakdown was amazing at times. I was watching in Wales, they were saying Wales winning the breakdown battle. And I was going, they're only winning the breakdown battle because England are holding onto the ball well at times. And so Wales are having to defend more. But I was going, man, when England get on the front foot, they are smashing rucks and there's no one to get near it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you must understand when England and where England were playing. So they brought a lot of short runners off nine when they got into Wales's half because they wanted to tighten that defensive line up before going to wide space. So a really good example of the tactical battle is that just before England's try, on 16 minutes, Wales got their first really sort of good line-out possession, 40 metres out from England's try line. And they went wide from the set piece and then they tried to come wide again to the middle of the field. They went five phases and got turned over at the breakdown. Now, England kicked the line out, and from the line out, what did we go? 25 phases before the May try. So if that 25 phases, England went with a creative strike play off the line out to see if they could test and probe the Wales defence. And then after that, they went about five short phases off nine. Then they went wider again, about 20 metres wide. Then they went five short ones again until, and you talk about the ruck speed, they did get turned over a few times on the day, but when they were banging in short runners off nine and creating quick ruck ball in a row, then you're tightening that Wales defence up to the point where they couldn't cover Farrell on the wraparound. And when Farrell, obviously the obvious thing, Farrell's beautiful pass over the top to Launchbury and his skill in passing it back inside. But did you see where May came from?
I knew he came from a long way, but then when you showed me the clip of basically 60-metre run to get the 2-metre try, as he said to me, is I knew he came from a long way, but I hadn't tracked him from how far he started from all the way on the other touchline, like out of camera shot, to get to the far wing and to finish that try. And you knew the head on the head, those 25 phases. But what I, watching that game live, what I really took in was the amount the ball was in play and how masterful that was from England. It took the sting out of Wales's defence at times, because you just can't keep coming off the line like that in 4-minute blocks. And there were so many long blocks and like those long phase blocks. And England were winning 9 times out of 10 all of those long periods of battle. They were coming out with the positive outcome. And that's where I was like, I don't care who's playing today. If England keep winning those long sets like that or getting the positive outcomes from it, they're going to win against anyone.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest indicators of that was after half time. Obviously, how teams come out for the start of the second half, you're seeing what's been said in the change room. So it's an interesting guide of the tactics being used. So from what I could tell at half time, one of Warren Gatland's favourite tactics is he favours Wales' fitness. He's always done it with Wasps, he's always done it with Wales, and he gets them fit. One of the things to take advantage of that is he keeps his kicks on the pitch. He doesn't kick out. So you're more ball in play time and more phases. But I just think they got it slightly wrong at the weekend. If you look at the period at the start of the second half, the ball's in play for, there was a phase that was 3 minutes.
It was just under 4 minutes, I remember.
4 minutes. And within that, England kicked 4 times from within Wales's half to turn them. And Wales kicked back, keeping the ball on the field. So in that 4 minutes, Wales ended up making 14 tackles and England 3, and it ended with a line out. In the end, England kicked out 10 metres from Wales's line. So for me, I know Wales want to rely on their fitness and keeping the ball in, but that was the wrong time to do it and the wrong area of the field. And as I say, I find it unbelievable that Wales hung in there and stayed in the game and actually came back with a bit of momentum. Because when I saw exchanges like that, I thought England are absolutely nailing the tactics in this game.
Yeah, exactly. And that's credit to Wales, because rugby's an 80-minute game. And the fact that they hung in there, the pendulum eventually swung back to them and they took their opportunities pretty well. Like, there's a few. Obviously, the TMO decision. I'm quite happy we're not just going nuts about it. Okay, it was supposed to be a try. Yes, but I still think England would have won that game even if it had been a try or whatever. But I've played in so many games where we've been screwed by the ref and you just got to deal with it. So I'm sort of not going to spend this pod addressing that. But there was that moment they almost scored. The Shingler break, they almost scored. But if it wasn't for Owen Farrell's ability to regather that ball at the back, it almost bobbled on him as he slid and he regathered it. Where I think Wales score there if they get that possession back. And then Owen's turnover in that long set, that then they eventually went back and the ball stays in play for a long time after that. But Owen's turnover there was pivotal for us as well. Or Wales would have had 3 tries that day.
Yeah.
England left tries out there. If Cole, in the first half, if Cole doesn't sort of, there was almost like a miscommunication off 9. Danny forced the pass. Cole was coming against the grain flat to the line and he spills that. If they hold onto the ball for a phase or two more there, they had Wales broken. You know, it's only an execution issue, but tactically, I think they'd done Wales there. And then also the other one where Jack Noel got done for, it was quite a harsh off your feet. I thought when you bounce back up and you have an effective play, I'm for letting that favour in the attack, but it is what it is. I thought there England were close to scoring or getting 3 points from breaking Wales there.
Yeah, and that's what, to me, makes an amazing test match. Because you've got all these different potential breaking points. You know, you've obviously got, as we said...
And I forgot the Sam Underhill tackle, which I was going to say for Wales, which was world-class, mate. You break it down to me, because I know you've watched it a lot of times.
Well, again, that Underhill tackle, if you track it back, he'd actually fallen over going for a tackle, and he got off the ground to make up about 15 metres on the angle to make that tackle, which was unbelievable. So there's all these different factors, and I thought it was an unbelievable test match. And obviously, we haven't mentioned Gav Ainscombe, but when he went to 10, what a difference he had. I mean,
yeah, big time. There's a lot of talk about they should have played Patchell and him the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, the other way. I think, well, with Patchell again, tactically, Eddie Jones had said it in the week, hadn't he? He said all he's going to see is Jonathan Joseph in his eye line. And Patchell didn't really deal well with it because I think Wales tried to go wide too early and it was tough on Patchell, whereas England banged in the short lines.
And I love what England, with those short lines that you talked about earlier, just the detail on where they're attacking. It's kind of what the All Blacks did in the summer with the Lions. But when you've got a team with good line speed, they're isolating that one-out defender from the ruck who traditionally has to watch nine. And your main job is, you know, is usually a front five forward and you're going, oh, all right, I've got to watch Danny Kerr. So you're immediately, that is your main focus. But then England are coming back against the grain and trying to isolate that defender and attacking on either side of him. Courtney did it so well with a few step backs inside. Johnny May runs that line around there really dangerously as well. I think England did smart there. It took the sting out of the line speed. It narrowed the defence and it got them quick ball. It was like sort of a chink in the armour they found to get quick ball.
Absolutely. And they if they did go wide, they went behind those runners. And so the 1-2-3 defender for Wales outside the ruck had to respect those hard runners. Yeah. And again, just created a bit of a change in the foot speed of the defenders to create more time for the wider attackers. Whereas I think Wales tried to go wider a little earlier and didn't get such good results from it.
100%. And then just one thing I want to touch on is the Sam Underhill tackle. The ball had been in play for almost 4 minutes at that point when he made that tackle, which to be able to do that is unbelievable. But also, if you watch that three, it was 57, I think it was 57-40, and he makes the try just like bang on 3 minutes or whatever. He makes a tackle, bang on 3 minutes. But the set before that was almost 4 minutes as well, and it had just been a line out and they went again. So that was a huge period of the game. And he's still, after that much time in play, able to make that tackle. And then what about the tackle itself? The fact that when the guy's diving that low, most people there would try and shoulder, like tuck their arm and just bump him with the shoulder and hope they hit touch. But he casually went over the top, just slipped his hand under the hip and just flipped him over. Like, it was like grappling-esque because Williams has no way of countering that momentum, if you know what I mean? When Underhill bumps him from the side, Williams' momentum is still probably going to take him over. And it's a 50-50 call on the touchline and the flag. But when he flips him like that, he has no point of strength or anything to combat that movement. And that is something that I was blown away. I love martial arts and grappling. And I was like, I don't know if that was Eddie's grappling stuff they do, but that he must have a understanding of grappling. The way he low tackles and the way he did that, he must have some form of grappling background.
Yeah, that was some sort of ninja move there.
Yeah, I think that's the bit, but I think we should see that more often.
Yeah, well, I know certainly Paul Gustard, the defensive coach, looks from inspiration from all around the world and different sports. And, you know, I've studied some tackling techniques in rugby league and it inspires a lot of where you see the sort of choke tackle that Ireland are famous for.
Yeah.
Because you get hooks underneath.
Yeah, it's all about the underhooks, mate.
And then you clamp them to take their leg power away so they can't get back down to ground. Yeah. And a lot of that is from martial arts. And I certainly learned from watching one of the great rugby league coaches when he was over, an Aussie guy, he was over at Wigan. And I mean, it's awesome learning from anywhere, but learning from other sports that you can apply to rugby, I think is amazing. And I think Paul Gustard's one of the world leaders at that.
Yeah, when I was learning like basic wrestling sort of grappling takedowns, this is post-rugby, I remember saying to myself, like, I was going, mate, if I had this for the catch tackle back then, I'd be, you know, every time, mate, you can time it if you get it right, you know?
And you don't have to be the bigger or stronger guy.
No, you just have, it's all timing, mate. It's all timing.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I think it's really interesting how you can learn from other sports. And And listen, as we again develop and get into the techniques, you'll be amazed how many test matches are won by try-saving tackles.
Exactly. And
same as wingers practice put-down drill, Sean Edwards used to call it. So now it's holding the ball on the inside arm and diving with your feet up so you can get the ball down whilst your whole body's out of the pitch, but it's in the air. They practice that, of course. And so the same as practicing your last-ditch tackles.
Oh, mate, I completely agree. It was awesome. I thought England really put a statement out there. I think it's been slightly missed by some people, but I think the teams that they're going to face will get it, if that makes sense. When they line up with Scotland, Scotland will know what England did in that game. Ireland will know what England did in that game, even if maybe the whole rugby public hasn't quite grasped it yet. I saw a lot of people that were annoyed with England going, oh, we're going backwards under Eddie, or, you know, we're never going to be right for the World Cup, or, you know, England were okay, but I'm like, no, mate, you're missing some of the beauty in what they've done. And, you know, Eddie with the mind games in the week, I was fine with it. After the game, he got baited in and lost his temper and sort of annoyed, where I felt he should have just risen above it because his team had played well. But part of me also understood why he was annoyed, because his team had gone out there and done something pretty awesome, and all they wanted to talk about was the TMO or this, or and he probably took offense that they were devaluing and missing his, like, the good of what he'd done or his team had done.
I can completely understand his frustration. If it wasn't appreciated, not that he needs people to be appreciating what he's doing, but you're talking about a test match in pretty slippery conditions against a quality defence. And, you know, people think entertaining rugby is played in a certain way. I appreciate the tactics of it. And if you look at it, the reason people may see that is because if you look at the stats, passes made, Wales 224, England 177. Meters made, 501 by Wales, 411 by England. So you'd say, well, that's more entertaining by Wales. But England was so much more effective about playing in the right areas. And they conceded 10 turnovers, England, and Wales conceded 16. Rather.
16, exactly. And there's so many stats here that highlight England kicked 65% of their possession, where Wales kicked 56 of it. And then the other stat that I liked on the things we saw, was the positive outcomes, the percentages. Where was it? Positive outcome. Apologies, mate. I'm getting my little stat sheet up. It's quite small. Oh, England had a 71% positive outcome off their possessions, where Wales was at 53. That was probably one of the biggest stats sort of disparity between the two. Was the positive outcomes of, and that was to me what decided the game, was those sets where England would come out with the outcome.
Yeah, because that plays into the 16 Wales turnovers compared to England's 10, because England put more pressure on. And last week, you know, we talked about Evans, Halfpenny was out, so it's Anscombe and Adams. The week before, they're running onto the ball, rugby's easy, it's as many touches as you can get, it's taking people on. And we said it's going to be a completely different game from this week. They'll be turned, they'll be challenged in the air, and they'll be thinking about all their defensive duties. And rugby will seem like a different game. And that's what England did. And it was driven, as you said, through the spine. Joe Launchbury, again, I love him, so I'll mention him every week. 16 carries, 19 tackles, and the beautiful offload for the try. With him and that tight five in the engine room, I mean, you go through the spine, then you go, Kerr, Ford and Farrell were unbelievable on field position. And then you talked about Eddie Jones's interview, but quote of the week's got to be comparing Mike Brown to Peter Shilton. I thought that was amazing from Lost to come up with that one. But it's true. Brown was amazing at the back. And again, people say that he's limited in his game, but on a test match rugby in that cauldron, he was unbelievable. And in fact, May's try, the first try, started with us, England, winning the aerial battle, because Brown won it receiving, and then Watson won it
back with a tap back, and then Owen saw the space and kicked it. It was perfect.
So to me, that's entertaining, you know.
Yeah.
But that takes unbelievable skill and how they've trained it in and they've used that as their tactics. You need to appreciate that as well, you know.
I know. And the thing that annoys me is that if the All Blacks had done what England had done that day, people would be, I think people would be cheering them, you know? I think England have to almost go above and beyond to show that now. And it's not me being biased. I was there, mate. And I think if the All Blacks had done that exact performance, people were saying masterful by the All Blacks, you know, the kicking game, the way they controlled this, where I just thought England didn't get the credit they fully deserved at times for how good they were that day. And that kind of, I'm willing to put the full stop. Jonathan Joseph had a great game as well. Their whole team played well. There's no one on the England side I think who played badly.
No, I guess the one criticism you could have is that they did let Wales come back into
it. Yeah, exactly.
When Anscombe went to 10, he was a real threat. But if you look at the break that he made when Underhill made the tackle, that was actually from a loose England kick, a very, very rare loose England kick. But obviously, Wales did come back into it more in the second half, so that could be a criticism.
Yeah. But that's Test rugby. You don't get 80 minutes of dominance. I thought Wales earned their way back into it by not giving the penalties away when England really had them under pressure, and that allowed them to come back into it. I think 99% of teams in world rugby would be in a 20-point hole at that point.
Yeah, and in those conditions, yeah, they would have crumbled. I thought it was remarkable that Wales stayed in it, actually.
Yeah. And I think Wales are in good stead in this competition. Like, I don't think there's any shame in them losing that game to England, because I think everyone else would have lost that game in the competition on that day. And I think they probably would have, if every other team had come there, I think the 12-6 result probably would have been the most flattering result.
I completely agree. And now the big test is they go away to Ireland. So that's going to be the tasty one this week.
Exactly. We're going to preview those after. So let's just go through now. Next game I want to talk about with you is the Ireland-Italy game. I don't think we need to go in as much detail, but what were your thoughts?
Right, well, Ireland were back in business, because we talked them up first week and said how well the coach they are by Joe Schmidt, and they struggled a little bit to get going. So I'll just go a little bit into the Ireland attack. What you saw was a lot of sort of passes behind the back, a lot of wraps and loop plays. Now, the key in this is that it creates multiple threats coming at the defensive line. And it's a nightmare for defence, because they're consistently making decisions. And we've talked about it before. What makes you tired? This is you in life before you even get to rugby. It's moving makes you tired, and consistently having to think makes you tired and make decisions because it stresses you out. And that's what Ireland do to you. They move you about and they make you make decisions consistently, especially when they have these deep passes with a lead runner and a wrap and loop options where everyone is a threat. Now, the key for them being successful is the release timing of the runners. So often Ireland work in groups of three. You'll have the playmaker on the ball, and let's just say it's a setup where they've got a pass behind the back. So they've got a lead runner. So one of the bigger forwards, let's say Devin Toner, outside Sexton, you have to respect him as a running threat. Then they can have a playmaker out the back of him. But then they'll have the exact same formation outside that second playmaker. So the key is that second group having they start their run based on the second playmaker, not the first playmaker. And when they do that, it's unbelievable the opportunities they create. And I think the winger that scored under who was it?
Was it Stockdale?
Stockdale, when he scored his try coming from left to right under the post, took the defender in as the secondary lead runner. And they were just very tight, small movements, but the Italy defence couldn't cope with it.
Yeah, I thought Ireland were good. I thought they were a little bit slow to get started in the way that they became very clinical as the game went on. But early on, there was a few sets where the Henshaw, Aki, sort of, didn't seem quite as in sync as I was expecting, you know, the next week. The thing that I noticed, the big improvement for me was the way the forwards moved the ball. So those first runners against France, I thought it was just too much one-out runners, and they weren't really getting the gain line against a good French defence. And then that made it very hard for them to play and get through the phases of their attacking rugby. They couldn't hold on to the ball. Where this time I thought early on, they were already tipping. They already looked like they were going to get the run in. They're already putting balls at the back from the forward carry. I just said, that's Ireland at their best. When they start doing that, they become so much harder to defend. They get those early gain lines. And then you give Sexton and those boys time. They can aerial play. They can create shape. They've got all the options in the world.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about, that release timing, that everyone was an option this week.
Yeah, exactly.
You could have the tip. You could have the ball around the back. You could have the return to the playmaker looping round. And it was all in motion, and it was all going forward, threatening the line. Now, one other thing I'd say that played into that is, did you see Italy challenge a single breakdown in that game? Because I didn't.
No. And this is the thing is, right, so I'm going to get on this, but I thought Arden were good, but I still don't know how good they are because they were put under no pressure.
Zero
pressure. So that's, I don't want to take away from Italy because Italy are an improving side and they are moving in the right direction. But at the same time, Ireland looked okay in week one. They looked good in round two, but they were not put under any pressure. Where England and Wales played on the weekend in probably the most pressurized situation you're going to see in Test rugby in this Six Nations, unless it when England and Ireland collide. And that is a fair representation of where they're at, where I don't quite know where Ireland are at yet. And I'm waiting for Wales to put them under that intensity and pressure to see if they can do that under that pressure. They might be able to do it because they've got an amazing side, but I haven't seen it yet in this competition.
Yeah, I'm really excited by seeing how they cope because I was so disappointed. There was just no line speed. There was no ruck pressure. So Ireland could basically do what they want from anywhere in the field because they could just create quick ball. And I thought that was poor by Italy. And I think, actually, if you look back to their progress under Conor O'Shea, one of the key factors was that they had Brendan Venter working with their defence.
Yeah.
And if you look back to, they had the big win in November 2017 against South Africa. Brendan, I've worked with him. He's unbelievable. He's such an inspirational guy, and his knowledge is incredible. But he can turn any team into an unbelievable defensive team, much like Sean Edwards. And I thought they made great strides under him. And certainly in defence, they've gone backwards. And you could just contrast the time that the Ireland playmakers had on the ball behind the front line, whereas in the England-Wales game, you just didn't have that time.
You don't have it. And that's why Scotland imploded in week one, because Wales put them under that pressure.
Yeah. And really, one thing that really stood out to me was the one time that Italy did go up and try and accelerate on the pass behind the lead runner. The one time they did that, Costello actually went through, made a leg tackle in the 22, in the Ireland 22, forced a loose kick.
Yeah.
And that's when Italy scored. And
Costello
ended up tracking back and giving the scoring pass to Tommaso Allan. But that was the only time they pressured past the gain line defensively.
No, I agree. And that's what was missing for me was, I think Italy have moved forward in attack, but I do think defensively they've been poor. And I think that's a very fair point about Brendan. And is he not there anymore? Is that what's happened?
No, well, there was then South Africa wanted him involved. He's not with South Africa anymore, but there was a bit of contention because he was with Italy. Then South Africa wanted him back, and I think he went back to South Africa for a while. But I think he's consulting with South Africa, but not working with Italy. And you can really see the difference. In fact, another indicator was when Italy did try a loop play similar to how Ireland had done it. Parise gave the loop pass, and Henshaw intercepted because he was coming up with line speed and cut it off from the outside. And
just shows
try, unfortunately. Yeah. Himself, but
I know, and that's the thing is. So what I'm saying is, like, there probably might people, some people that listen to this pod saying, "Oh, you're favouring England here or favouring England and Wales." Listen, the ball in, say, the Scotland France game, the ball was in play for 36.31 minutes. Test rugby, that's average to low. And then a ball play in the Ireland Italy game was 36 minutes 43. But then the ball play in England v Wales was 47-46. So there was another 11 minutes of intense pressure in that game with England Wales, which they were tested under and had to perform under, which the other teams, Scotland felt in week one and buckled under it. And none of the other teams have felt since, other than that England Wales game.
And you have to train differently. If you're training for that sort of ball in play time, we've already mentioned there were periods of play where the ball was in play for 4 minutes in a row.
Yeah.
That changes your training week. You prepare for England and Wales, you have to prepare that you train for periods of 4 minutes. So that means, let's take your training week. Let's say you're going through, you want to practice playing from your starter plays. Let's say you start from a line out. So you start from a line out, you play your strike to score, then you go into your phase play. Now what you need to do then is, let's say you knock the ball on after the fourth phase. Then the coaches will say, right, scrum, left-hand scrum, and you launch from there, but you sprint from the end point to the next starting point and you play continuously for 4 minutes to get yourself ready for test match intensity at that time. So you need to be able to execute 15 on 15 in training. Yeah. It might be maybe full tackle, but you need to execute 4 minutes in a row. And regardless of the outcome, if you kick one out, you sprint to the next starting point and you start again. And that's how you prepare in the week. And you have to extend that ball in play time that you're prepared for.
Well, that's what England have been doing for a long time. I know Wales have had an emphasis on that. And that's why I think they coped better than most teams would have in that, is that Gatlin has been pushing that for a long time for them. Didn't help them in such that I think they could have been smarter than keeping the ball in play, like we talked about. But at the same time, they have been aiming to train on that under that intensity. England have been doing that for a long time, showed it at times, but that was really a masterful display. I know the training is so intense under Eddie, and that's what he wants, and there's a reason or a method to the madness. And it paid off on the weekend. But yeah, that's the thing, is I thought Ireland were good, but I don't know where we can measure them against that Italy side, especially at the fact they were in Dublin as well. So I want to see them against Wales to be sure they're going to be, you know, England's equal in this series, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, I had a phone call in the week from another coaching friend of mine, and his question was, how would you play against what England? Because they bring so much pressure. And I said, well, I'd play against England how England played against Wales. Yeah. So that's going to be the interesting thing, to see the tactics this week, because Ireland did play more expansively and played a lot of these movements against Italy. But will they try and do that against Wales' stifling defence this week? Or will they go more towards the England style?
They're going to do the England, mate. I can see it already, that Sexton, Murray, you know, either Keith Earls, thingy at fullback, Carney, like, you know, they've got the kicking game to do that. They back the aerial game. They're going to kick so much in that game against Wales. I can see it already. I think they're going to play at the right times, yeah. But that is how you beat Wales. England just gave you the blueprint, like, and Ireland can do it. And then it comes down to, when England Ireland play, can Ireland do that better than England? If you know what I mean, that's the question for me.
And that's the pressure of Test rugby. Can you, two teams bang on form, who's going to come out of the arm wrestle in front? And then when it comes time that you've created the space after all those exchanges, then can you execute the space? Yeah. And I think really, Corbs, at the moment, what we're seeing is the Six Nations almost fragmenting into two halves, where Ireland, Wales and England are so confident and they're so good defensively and they're bringing the pressure against you. You must change your tactics to play against them. Whereas France, Italy and Scotland, whilst France and Scotland will try and bring a bit of pressure, I think there's opportunities to play to more space against them earlier. So, for instance, if you look at Teddy Thomas's second try against France, it's really interesting. It comes from a wide ruck. And so France want to go wide. They do two passes that go behind lead runners. And Dumeru receives the ball after two passes 18 metres behind the gain line. And then he plays flat and they make the line break and Teddy Thomas goes and scores. So what they've done is they've pulled Scotland. Scotland wanted to blitz, but they couldn't blitz as far as 18 metres. So the two passes, they got to the second playmaker. Scotland had tried to come up but couldn't get in man and ball. And then he put the flat ball. That was the killer pass, was the next flat one that they flew onto at pace, and they got round the Scotland defence by doing those two deep passes first. I don't think you can do that against England, Ireland and Wales, because the danger is that they do come and catch you 15 metres behind the gain line. Whereas against the teams that are not coming with as much confidence and line speed, you can go wide and get round them. So I'm really interested this week to see if England take note of what France did with that second Teddy Thomas try and actually do go a bit wider and maybe go deep, deep, flat to get outside Scotland rather than playing the same tactics we saw against Wales.
I think you're seeing them adapt their tactics. I think they're at that level now where they are adapting wholesale to the team that they're playing because they have that capability now. Where I don't think they've been in a position where they've really been able to do that, even under Eddie at times. I don't think, even under that period, where I think now they, when they're fully fit and Ford and Farrell and the players they have, that diversity of their game and tailoring their game plan, like the All Blacks have been able to do for a long time to their opposition, is incredible.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see the development this week. You know, for all the people that were maybe saying we're a bit limited in the game plan last week, I think we could open up and be very entertaining this week. Obviously, we've got to get our fundamentals right, but if we do that, I think the tactics could change slightly, and it'd be really interesting to see if we do go in with that mindset.
100%. And you've got to remember, England scored 60 points against Scotland last Six Nations, so they know at the right times their attack is going to work. So it's just putting together their game plan to how best to box Clever. And I think we'll see a more attacking game plan from them. And then I think Ireland will kick more against Wales because Ireland are a good team that can adapt as well.
Yeah.
And a big question is, what do Wales do differently against Ireland? Because if Ireland play that same game plan, are Wales going to learn the lessons of how to do it? Or are they going to back that they almost survived it against England? If they take the chances against Ireland, they can survive it again. There's a lot of question marks.
That's going to be
what I love about the Six Nations and Test rugby.
Oh, I love it this week to see how the teams move forward is really interesting, and I just love trying to get into the coaches' heads and see where they think they can gain the advantage this week. Yeah.
And so lastly, I think it's fair, France-Scotland, we didn't really break down, but your thoughts on that as well?
I think Scotland, again, if you talk about practicality, Scotland's first try, it was a left scrum. They went wide, probed. There was nothing on because the France fullback had come up into the line early. So they put in a kick behind to turn them. And then France kicked out, and then you saw Scotland go with a drive, go with power runners around the corner playing in tight. And it was actually Gray that bumped off the France 9 and got the offload to Gilchrist, who passed on to Maitland for the try. So you saw a bit of practicality just in that one example of kicking in behind and then bringing the power play around the corner. I think they did really well mentally. They were obviously 10-0 down and 17-7 down. So I think that was a great test that they needed actually to come through. But obviously England's a different finish this week.
So there was a few things of my thoughts on that game. I thought France aren't... I don't think they're contenders in this tournament at all. But at the same time, they have their biggest ability... is considering, I look at them and think, man, they are not coached really yet. Like they're not, especially in attack, they're not knowing. They got their game going a bit this time, but it was all individuals, mate. It was good forward carries, offloads, open the field, or a bit of jouer out wide, but it wasn't really their attacking shape or system that was doing it, if you know what I mean. I think they lack that shape and rely more on individual brilliance. But they're a hard team to put away because defensively they're solid, set piece they're solid. And so that kind of means that when you're in a game and you're in touching distance or they individual or you're not getting blown away, individual brilliance gives you tries. And Teddy Thomas has given that to them twice this week, once the other week. And I think they were good. What worries me about Scotland is Finn Russell, mate. I rate him highly. Like, I've seen him play some amazing games, but he's not controlling the game at all. Like, do you think they wanted to bring Laidlaw to 10, or do you think that Laidlaw even, like, based on how Price had played leading up, but they needed Laidlaw because he gave them more control? And I think Finn, you know, he missed touch on a penalty, he kicked the ball out on a full, he made a few errors still. It kind of worries me that if he plays like that against England, Scotland are screwed.
Yeah, again, it might sound harsh. I mean, these guys are unbelievably talented, and they play in the flow and with their clubs, and they do great things. But would you have Finn Russell in your Lions squad?
No.
Or your Lions starting team? I wouldn't have him near it compared to...
Well, he didn't make the Lions. He didn't make the Lions, and a lot of people are upset. But I think the Six Nations has probably justified Gats's selection, that, you know, Farrell, Ford have been standout. Sexton is Johnny Sexton. You'd probably pick Patchell even still over Finn Russell at the moment. And you could say Anscombe as well.
I think he's a flat track bully. You know, he's brilliant on his day. And this is this is obviously a bit harsh, but tactically it's a different game when you're talking about winning test matches and pulling your team and pushing your team around the park. And even, I've got to say, I think Hogg at the back, I think he's got a lot of mistakes in him. He's unbelievable to watch, but he's got a lot of mistakes in him. You go back to old Peter Shilton at the back for England, just so reliable, a rock at the back. And in test matches, especially with the pressure and if it's poor weather conditions, it is a contrast. But I think those guys are great on their day and great going forward, but I never backed them from the start of this tournament.
Yeah, and you were true, mate. You were true to it. I was a little bit on the hype train, I believe. I just thought that I saw them in the autumn and I thought they turned a bit of a corner, but they just haven't found a way to play their brand of rugby yet against really good defences.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Well, they'll get another good defence this week against England.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying is that, they're going to get almighty press. And you think Finn Russell kicked badly from hand with the French pressure. Wait till that pressure from England. We didn't really touch it, but mate, every time Wales went to kick, there was someone putting pressure on that boot. Like, it was, I felt for them having to exit their half at times when England were like that. It was ferocious.
But test match rugby, if you want to be a top team, you must challenge everything.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I agree.
Gut, you challenge every aerial ball. You challenge every scrum. And you just cumulative pressure. And you're just trying to choke the other team out. And that's what we see. When I'm breaking the almost into two groups now, Ireland, Wales and England, line speed kills. They're just getting up in faces, putting pressure on and then challenging your ruck. The other teams, they can't do it consistently, so they'll always be an outlet for a good attack.
Yeah, completely agree, mate. And I guess we kind of previewed those games anyway. So if you look at England-Scotland, I'm favouring England. I think they attack more. I think the pressure puts the Scots in a bad way at times. Yeah. But at Edinburgh, it still could be a competitive game for a while. But I do see England being heavily favoured in that one.
Yeah, I see England and Scotland, as I said, they've got a really...
End the pack as well. England's scrum could end the maul and things like that could be tough for Scotland to handle. You never know at Test Rugby because it depends on the ref and there's so many variables. But if England do get a sniff there as well, imagine them getting easy yards into Scotland's half with penalties. It doesn't look good to me.
No, I think England could do very well there.
But and then, you know, the Ireland-Wales game is super intriguing. We touched on it. How do Ireland play under that Welsh pressure? And how do Wales play if Ireland bring the very same game plan to them that England did? Or a similar-esque game plan?
Yeah, I can't wait for this one. I think it could go either way. I'm so impressed.
I have this quiet favour of Wales. These are some of the stories. Wales are going to have Faratau back. They could have Dan Bigger back as well. What would you do at 10?
Oh, I'd put Bigger in at 10 for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bigger at 10. Who would you play at fullback? Halfpenny if he's back? Or would you put Patchell there?
Well, Anscombe was so good.
Anscombe, yeah.
Got to keep Anscombe in So I'd probably go Anscombe at the back. And
do you think they missed Halfpenny's defensive play in the back of filling the space in that kick tennis battle? Because he is good at the back there. I've played with him. That is one of the things that Halfpenny does very well.
Yeah, I think they found space well, and there were some low kicks, so it would have been, I'm not sure there were more opportunities.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I didn't think it would have changed the game, but I was just wondering if that would be a factor. If they think that Ireland are going to kick more, would they bring Halfpenny back in? I think Fagatau's got to come in, because he is world-class, but it's quite harsh on that Welsh back row. Shingler's been immense, Navidi's played well, and I thought Moriarty was much better than the week before, and was physical, man. They needed that.
Yeah, I think Moriarty would be the one to drop out.
You have an impact sub as well then with physical, wow, who brings that on. And I think that only strengthens them.
Yeah, Shingler's a threat. I think he's awesome. And then Navidi's just good at getting over the ball. He's a clamp. So I think that would be a good mix, actually, if they bring Faletau back in.
Other people, England, it looks Sam Simmons has been ruled out for the next two games.
Yeah, that's a shame, as he was building.
But Nathan Hughes is back, and Eddie's already announced that he's starting in the Scotland game, is what I read online.
Yeah, again, talk about the depth, and it's the same. England and Ireland have a depth that the other squads I just don't think can match.
What would you do with your bench and back row with Hughes then? So if you say you put Hughes for Simmons in, do you leave Rob Shaw in, what do you do with Sam Underhill? Is my question after that game. Do you leave him on the bench, or do you give him a start away in Murrayfield?
Yeah, no, I'd leave him on the bench and have him have the same impact and build his confidence from there. Hughes comes in as the carrier. Rob Shaw stays as the engine. And Courtney Lawrence, I just think he just offers so much around the park.
Yeah, Courtney's phenomenal. Like, I'm not touching Courtney in that team.
I'll leave that.
I think finding Courtney at six was the blessing that England had been needing in their back row balance questions. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, it just gives you so much variety.
You know, and you get Lawrence, Bria, Toji and Laws on the field. Do you know what I mean?
Unbelievable combination.
Three guys who would really start in almost any and most well and most international sides 15s, you know?
Absolutely.
And so that's the, and then all right, last the other game. Oh, the big thing I want to talk to you about is Ireland, mate. No Henshaw, big loss. He's out for that game against Wales. So but then the big one, no Tadhg Furlong, who is, in my eyes, probably the best tight end in the world right now, or up there in the world 15 for tight end. Yeah. And Andrew Porter, who played scrummed well against Italy, but England battered Italy scrum. And this is his first season at tight end. He was a loose head halfway through last year. They made him a tight end, but this is his first senior season of tight end rugby. He made his debut in the autumn.
Yeah.
He's been playing for Leinster. He doesn't start for Leinster. He comes on for Tadhg. But now he's going to start. And then I don't know who the next tight end is. Does that worry you as well with Wales coming there?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. I mean, I'd say you'd be qualified to talk about that more than me. But certainly two of the names at the start of the tournament, two of the names that stood out for me in the Ireland squad, just from the form in Europe and in the home leagues, was Porter and Jordan Larmour. And now I think they're both going to get a run, and I think they're amazingly exciting young talents. And you could see them, I know you're saying it particularly in the front row, they're a bit green at the moment, but those two, if they get the run now, they could grow to be like stalwarts of Irish rugby in the next few years.
Completely agree. Like, I watched Porter in his 20s World Cup, who's playing loose head. He was phenomenal. But there's Kian Healy and Jack McGrath at Leinster, and he's a block of a man, and they've successfully so far made him a tight head. My worry is just that international level, there's always a difference between, even though he came off the bench, when you're the starter, especially at tight head, you have a bullseye on your head. Do you know what I mean? When you're the bench guy, you're kind of the afterthought on all the week's analysis.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I want to see is that's a big test for him. It's great that it's at home for him as well. But that is no. I remember my first games at tight end, at men's rugby, at test level. It's not fun, mate. It's still not fun at that point because you're a new kid on the block and you've got a target on your head. It takes a little while to get over that.
I think those two in particular are going to really step up. And Yeah. You know, they're names that maybe some people don't know, but I tell you, watch out for Porter and Larmour. I think they're going to have a great game.
Do you think that's who they bring in, Larmour, straight in there?
Yeah, because, well, Henshaw and Ringrose are both out now.
Yeah, so Ringrose is out.
Becky's come in. I think, you know, you've still got like Carberry, Larmour, all these young guys. And again, you've got people in the Irish squad, in the English squad. They bring people in and you just don't lose anything, actually. You gain more of a certain individual's attributes.
And that's the beauty of their system with the central contract and the, you know, it all steering towards the national side, that there's a lot of parity in what goes on. So when you come in, it's not like you're just coming into a brand new environment.
No, and they've had a lot of contact time in the squad with Joe Schmidt. They'll feel very comfortable. Ireland, you know, they've had times where they go on tours and take like a second team. They came out to America. They obviously have played here a few times. They played in Chicago, famously beat New Zealand.
And they played
but
Texas.
They've also played against the USA, and they fielded young guys. And so they've been used to playing under Joe Schmidt in Texas,
which is
obviously a tier two level. But I think they feel very comfortable in the system.
Agreed. Lastly, the two winless sides in the competition are France and Italy squaring off. It's in France, I believe. Is that right? I haven't actually looked.
It's in France.
Yeah, it's in Marseille, isn't it?
I'm not sure where.
They're doing one game in Marseille, one of their home games. I think it's this one, but what thoughts on that? We haven't really touched on it. I assume you're going to favour France based on what we've said about England. The only thing is Italy attack with width, and it possibly could stretch the French, but I see the French just being a better side.
Yeah, I hope that, again, Italy can build a bit more momentum. And the boy Menozzi, he looked like a bit of a David Lemmy at the back. I like the look of him, the little fella.
Yeah,
he's a good player. He'll get a bit more ball. And as you said, I think it would be a case of, as a viewer, just hoping there's some great individual moments, because I don't think either are building necessarily with great attacking patterns or really knowing the direction that they're going, but they have got some great individuals to watch. But just one other note on that, France have actually punished some players. They're out for...
Yeah, I was going to say this. I didn't see the next headline on that. So have they punished them? There was some sort of incident that they were pulled off the plane for and questioned for.
Yeah, they've dropped several players, but I don't know if they've been named who it is. But apparently,
I didn't see it on ESPN Scrum yet, but let me have a look. France dropped players after night out. Let me just pull this up real quick.
Ballou, Lepandre, Ituria, Lambe, Dante, Picamo, Lamoret, and Teddy Thomas. So Teddy Thomas.
Oh, jeez.
Scored, yeah. It is in Marseille.
Wow. It is in my, right. That is a game changer. Bring on Italy. That could be, I'm ready, mate. Come on, the Italians.
So Italy versus a bloody turmoil.
I know. They hold their flight so police could question players in relation to a reported sexual assault that allegedly took place at a bar on Sunday night. It is reported that Louis Picamo, Anthony Ballou, Jonathan Dante, Remy Lamoret, Yakuba Kamara and Felix Lambe were among those questioned over the incident. Although police were able to establish that no crime has been committed, back rower Kamara was the only member of the group not to be omitted from Brunel's squad to host Italy on February 23rd. There is the actual news story. But anyway, mate, I thought we summed up today pretty well. Thank you for coming on. I just think the detail in this pod, when you and me are on together, is very good. I enjoy it.
Yes, it was great talking, and I look forward to another great weekend of action.
Definitely, mate. Good luck in San Diego as well. Appreciate you coming on. But also, I want to shout out myself. It is 2... Is it 2 a.m.? It is 2:18 in the morning. That is a commitment in the UK I have for the Scrum Downaholics on this pod to get the best in the business, the best technical knowledge out there on this pod. So thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
And yeah, thanks to your jiu-jitsu instructor for giving you the energy to stay up late.
Yes, mate. Yes, I did a late night workout purely to keep awake for you. Boom. Another one. as we like to say on the Scrum Down. Another episode in the can, as they say. I think it's brilliant. I love having Rob on. I love the detail. I love the in-depth we go to. I think him being a coach and constantly trying to analyze the intricate details, replicate them on his own team, and just forward thinking, always trying to add to his game. I think you just get a very good insight when he comes on. So I'm going to try and have him on as much as possible. And I do promise to our American listeners, this week we will be getting some American stuff recorded as well. Blaine Scully, the USA captain, will be on that episode. So keep an eye out for it. It will either drop this week or next, but it'll definitely be out. And lastly, just a reminder to thank you all for the support. Subscribe, rate, like, favorite, tweet, retweet, share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell random people on the street, spread the word of the Scrum Down, the Scrum Downaholics. This pod is for you and it is driven by your support. It means so much to me. So a big thank you to all of you doing that. And just another request for me to keep doing it. It really is the lifeline and the blood that flows through this pod. Quickly want to give a quick promotion to No Six Nations on NBC this weekend, but NBC Sports Gold is covering all six Aviva Premiership games, so do not miss it live anytime you want. You watch it all. Another reason why you should get the NBC Sports Gold Rugby Pass. It definitely is worth it. No more jokes, I promise. But again, thank you guys for tuning in. I'll catch you guys next week, or I may catch you later this week with a US pod. So take care and peace.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.